Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Neil Harding. Morning, Neil. How's it going, man?
Good morning, Yas. Good to see you as always.
Likewise. Neil, just before we get into the thick of it, brief insight, who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there, man.
So currently, I'm working at West Bromwich Albion Football Club. Full-time role, I am the Sporting Excellence Professional Coordinator, which is doing the education for the scholars. And part-time alongside that, I'm fortunate enough to still be coaching on the grass with the under-14s, which is probably a favourite age group because of the challenges they bring. So, yeah, still enjoying it, still there.
Love that. Neil, I'm really interested there because one of the key things I said about the podcast and one of the reasons why I brought it together was really to show people that, one, we've all got this aligned passion in the game, which is great, but coaching is not for all of us. I'm not saying that's the case for you, but you've got, you know, Sporting Excellence Coordinator. More specifically, there's so many different roles we can go into and still be involved in this process. So let's take you right back to the start of your journey. How did you get into it? What, you know, where did coaching come for you?
Yeah, so always played as a young boy, Birmingham Boys Junior Leagues, played for Kings Heath Concord, which at the time was a very successful club. We had lots of good times, good memories. Didn't really have a coach. My first coach, if we can call him a coach in the nicest possible way, he was a hairdresser, owned a hairdresser's not far from where I lived. And coaching for us was, there's the pitch, there's a ball. I don't think we even had bibs, and have a game. And within that, he just encouraged us all the time. I don't ever recall getting told off or told not to do anything. It was just almost like, I don't think he really knew. I think he just had a passion for football and the local community and being a businessman. He just wanted to help keep the kids happy and off the streets, really.
I was just going to hit just on that then. Do you think that maybe at the time you could have taken for granted actually just how important just being encouraging as a coach could be, rather than, you know, what a lot of people think, you know, you've got to step in, you've got to give them the answers, if you like, and you've got to be constantly giving them information. And I think there's a lot of coaches out there, certainly from my experiences, that think they have to do that to be considered to be coaching, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think he subconsciously... It's helped shape who I am, really, mate, in a sense, because, and I've never really thought about this until the question you've just asked. I don't think he'd have known the answer as to why he probably didn't stop it, really, to help us. I genuinely think he just wanted us to have fun and smile and socially engage with each other. When I say help shape me, I'm very much around... player development. I see myself as a genuine development coach. Results don't really bother me, mate. I believe that I'm a dad of four boys. The ones that compete in anything, I just say to them, look, you can't be responsible for other players in your team. You can come off that football pitch knowing you did the best that you could do. And as long as you're smiling when you come off, you're in the right place. And I think that's probably something that, looking back now, that as a 9, 10, 11-year-old, that's probably what Tony, and the fact I remember his name, Tony Hill, good guy. The fact that he just instilled that in us is probably part of my beliefs and values now as a coach.
Awesome. Yeah, obviously we were speaking briefly off air, and you know, you talk about your sporting excellence coordinator role there. Obviously when we met, you know, almost 7-8 years ago now, and then when we did our A license together, you were coach development at the time, your coach education as they called it back then. How did you go from that? How did you get into that? And you know, where did your coaching journey really begin? Because obviously you talked there about Tony having a positive impact on you as a young player. Where did the coaches start come into it? And yes. How did that then develop into coach development?
Yeah, so the coaching came in my sister's ex-husband, actually. I was 26. I just left a job. And he just said to me, "No, you used to love football, didn't you?" And I went, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, there's a college the other side of town that's doing this course." He said, "I actually met the bloke and mentioned yourself." And I went, "Oh, okay, what's that about?" And he told me about an MVQ level 2. And a program they run that will enable you to get your junior team managers, today's level 1, and your FA level 2 coaching certificate, all as part of the course alongside your MVQ. And he just pushed me into it, really, in the nicest way. He just said, "Look, you should go for it. You're at a loose end. You don't know what to do. You're passionate about it. Go and have a go." And it was the best thing I ever done, mate. And I still see him and thank him to this day, because I would never have known about that course. It wasn't kind of a subject when I was at school. PE was PE. You couldn't get GCSEs for it. You know, it was just a leisurely thing that you'd done. So I went to North Birmingham College. I met Stuart Hall, who's a very well-known coach educator, still in the game somewhere in the world, and Tom Stack and Pat Wright. And they took me on a coaching journey, and I absolutely loved it, mate. Absolutely loved it. I took great pride in trying to be the best coach I could be. And Stuart was actually academy manager at Birmingham City then, and I lived down the road, and he invited me up, and I said, "Just come around, get around the coaches, have a look, ask questions." So that was the start of it all. I was 26.
So just building on that, because obviously, you know, similar to yourself, you know, it was never part of my plan to go into coaching. I had never even considered it, to be fair. But like yourself, you know, I enjoyed the game, and you know, I came to a situation in my life where actually the opportunity presented itself to go and do a coaching course, and I did it, and then I kind of not really looked back since. And you know, it's been like you said, probably the best thing I've done for myself, really, in that it's given me a sense of purpose, a sense of direction, and kind of it's just even at times where I've kind of come away from it, I've always ended up coming back to it, because it's the only thing I've ever really felt like I knew what I was doing. We spoke off air briefly around how coach education, coach development has changed. Let's just go back to that experience that you had there. What were some of the biggest things that you took away from that period of time where you did those qualifications, and what do you think has stayed consistent? Because obviously, you know, as coaches, we develop, we learn, we change. But it's still some fundamental things that we hold on to. So what were some of the biggest influences for you back then? And what's kind of still stayed consistent now?
So the importance of the technical detail around player development, individuals having information to help improve themselves. It's changed slightly. We spoke off air about it. How do I phrase it? I think we don't need to stop the session as much as we probably used to. The old stop, stand still. However, I still do use that sometimes if it's needed. I don't think one size fits all. But I think we've just probably shifting away a little bit from putting this detail in, which for me is we talk about teaching basic fundamentals. For me, basic fundamentals is kicking foot, non-kicking foot, body shape, protection, all that stuff. I mean, I remember my level 2, and it was my favourite qualification I'd done. I really enjoyed it, mate. I had to teach or improve the inside and outside hook turn with a group of players. And my small-sided game was improving defensive third when you have an imbalance. It was kind of like disorganised defending and how you stepped in to help the player. And we used to have like a coaching formula then. It was almost like spot it, ask the question, let me provide you with a solution and then let them have a go. Once they had a go, right, on your next touchy as you're going to play live, and you'd see if they do it. And if they didn't, some coaches would probably stop it again. I never would. I'd just let it go, because learning takes a little bit of time to sink in. And sometimes in the old days, because the person who was opposing you knew what you were going to do, they'd cheat a little bit and stop you doing it, which was great, because I learned then as an educator to say, well done, Yaz, I've showed you how to do that. When the ball on your first touch were play live, if Neil cheats and comes across, you might have to do another way. So yeah, it allowed them that freedom to express themselves. And the other thing with the coach developers is I feel I was really lucky to have some really good coach educators, mate, that are what I'd class to be big educators in the game, and you know, some in that Hall of Fame that the FA have, and rightly so. They were fantastic. And I think those people I hold in like really high regard now, and I think it's probably them that made me want to go further and almost take it as a career. Because of the environment they set out for me.
So let's just you know, just build on that and develop that a little bit further, because you talked about, you know, being a top class coach educator. What does that look like for you? Because, you know, coach education has changed massively over the years. The focus of where coach education takes coaches on their journey, the lens that, you know, we look through as coach developers in terms of what's important and what's not important, or what are fundamental things to kind of include within the content of courses, and I guess the perception of the coach developer may have changed massively as well. But for those that maybe haven't experienced what it was then in comparison to what it is now, what would you say made those guys in particular top coach developers?
I think firstly, yes, when I was fortunate enough to be on them courses, I really felt proud that I was sitting in front of these people that work for our national governing body, the FA. Amazing. At the start of my journey, I never thought it would take me where it's took me. And I remember seeing like Stuart Hall, as an example, doing the first one and thinking, I'd love your job. It's amazing. I would love to be standing there and have your knowledge to be able to help these people. And his personality was, again, something that I looked at and thought, learning takes place when people are smiling, when people are happy. It's almost like that saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think Stuart just set that tone, really, and some of the other educators. And then progressing through that, remember meeting Pete Sturge and John Allpress on my old Full Youth Award at Keele University, and just being in awe, just looking at them and thinking they're wearing that tracksuit, the Three Lions. It was just like, oh God, how do I get to you? How could I ever be you? You know, to do this for a job, someone pays you for something I'm so passionate about. And that's what really drove me. It was never the football ability of those people. It was never their, wasn't even really their knowledge, which was amazing. But you don't know how good that is till you get to know the person. And I think just the way they treated us, the way they gave us that respect, it was two-way. And again, for me, sitting in that classroom and seeing these people in them tracksuits and just thinking, wow, I just respected it from the start. And I think sometimes that, it's probably lacking today. I would never question them, I guess. It was just like my questions to them would have been, how do I do that? Make me better. I just had a real thirst. It was like, you know, that golden age of learning, that 10 to 12 were sponges. I just felt like a sponge at probably about 28, 29 then. And it was just like, I just want more.
It's interesting because, you know, to start off with, you know, I think come back to my own journey, and I remember like it was this morning, to be fair, like I just sitting coming into the room on level one, and I'm seeing these tutors at the front. And I just, it's literally similar to what you said. I think you lot are bloody lucky, man. You lot get to teach people football. Like, I don't know what it's going to take for me to get to that. But from then, I just wanted to be able to be in that position where I could do that and have that influence and have that impact and add value in that way. But, you know, listening to you there, you know, it just resonates with me a lot. And I think to myself, what do you think the coaches of today coming into courses now are thinking? Do you think there's that same perception? Do you think there's even an appreciation for that type of thing, or do you think it's even warranted?
It's a good question. So I think it's down to the individual, Yaz, as to who's coming through the classroom door, what do they want. I think where we sound very familiar is we recognised it as, how do I get to do this, talk about football, show you how to play football, share my knowledge, and somebody's going to pay me some money to do that was just amazing. And I think there'll be a lot of people that still want that pathway.
Mm.
I think we were lucky coming through. I think today it's a bit of a saturated market. I think we're producing a lot of coaches, which is fantastic. Are we producing almost too many, in the sense of, if it is a pathway they want as a career, is there enough jobs for those people? So it's almost, do we have to educate them on? I'll give you a perfect example. My oldest boy is in the third year at university, wants to work full-time in football. I'm trying to say to him almost, maybe look at a teaching qual. Be a PE teacher in school, part-time academy coach.
Mm.
Best of both worlds.
Something to fall back onto as well.
Yeah, because we'll always need teachers. And there's, you're probably more chance of having a job in that than there will be in football. And I think still, as much as it's grown, pay scales are very different in both. And I think as a young person, I can probably afford to work full-time in a football club. But as you get older, you might not always get the right job that enables you to do that. And I think we lose some really good people because of that. And I know the FA and the clubs are addressing that as well with the Premier League and the YouTube.
Mm.
So,
just, it's just interesting because you talk there about the younger generation. And do you think there's almost an element of them just not being aware of the challenges that exist in the industry and just hoping that doing the qualification is going to get them straight into it now?
Yeah, yeah. So I have this feeling, mate, and I say to the young coaches, obviously working at the club here, a lot of them know me anyway, and they know the roles I've been in. So they ask advice. And I think when I hear a lot of young coaches, and not just necessarily here, just on a coaching pathway, young universities, sometimes I'll go and do a chat down at a uni and speak to them. And what I'm finding is, with this generation coming through, is you can get qualified quick, but you don't get good quick. And I think that's a scary thing for me. It's almost like when I was delivering as a coach educator, after a level two as an example, even for somebody who was a really strong candidate, I'd probably put go and do 9 to 12 months now on the grass before applying for a UEFA B. I think some of them now pretty much finish a level two and start applying now. Whether they get on it or not, I don't know. But I think the process needs to be better in the sense of who we're picking for UEFA Bs, because I think as an ex-head of coaching, it's very difficult to find coaches that you probably need in a football club. And I think, do we go then to, does it become the club's responsibility to help shape and mould these new young people into, as an example, the club I'm at, do we need to shape the next young cohort coming through into what we want a West Bromwich Albion coach to be, our beliefs, our values, our pillars? And is that part of our role? I think possibly, yes.
I think there's two sides of it, isn't it? Because, if you've been at West Brom, Cat 1 Academy, for a young coach coming into that environment, you might get the opportunity to do that, right? Because they'll look at it and say, well, this is Cat 1. There isn't really much higher to go or whatnot. Therefore, they've already kind of maybe committed themselves to being with you guys. Whereas that same scenario, maybe going in at a Cat 3, even probably a Cat 2, to be fair, coaches always looking at it as a stepping stone to get to Cat 1, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So then it's a kind of catch 22. Well, yeah, we're going to bring in someone that we know is maybe not quite at the right standard. We're going to try and mould them, but actually we're not going to get the time to mould them because they're just going to get lost as soon as an opportunity comes up.
Yeah. So I'll give a live example, Yaz. When I was a head of coaching at a Cat 3 academy, and I love that role, lovely club, you know, really good community club. One day I had a conversation, just an informal chat, with a high up member of staff there, and they said, "Neil, we're starting to lose some of our coaches to some of the local clubs around us. Geographically, where we are, we're probably the only Cat 3."
Yeah.
And then you've got big Cat 1s and a couple of big Cat 2s around us. And I thought, oh, am I doing something wrong here? Are they leaving because of me? And then on reflection, what I realised was it was a bit of a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
If I was going to be as good head of coaching and have a passion to help develop these coaches, the reason maybe some of these higher category, bigger clubs are coming in for them is
because we've developed
good coaches.
Yeah.
So it was almost like, is it because of the success of the role? And I'm not saying it was a very difficult time. Yes, it was during COVID. So it was really difficult to really do what I really had planned, like as in CPD stuff, really, bringing in guests, etc. But yeah, and it was almost like, look, if I'm doing a bad job and no one comes in for our coaches, maybe that's a reflection on me. So I took it as a positive, really, and I had to hopefully show that person who was very big in the club that actually, yeah, I suppose you're doing a good job, too good a job, and these people are coming in for some of our coaches, which, again, I'd never see it as a reflection of me. I see it as a reflection of they wanted to learn and become better. They take ownership, and I just help that pathway and shape it a little bit, give them opportunity.
Just on that then, would that ever influence, and there's no right or wrong to this, but would that ever influence how you would then, how far you would go with them, knowing that actually, do you know what, it's causing us a bit of an issue because we're making it coaches so good they're leaving us?
Yeah. No,
maybe not even on a personal level. It might be from from higher up, but saying, yeah, just rein it back in, we don't want them to be that good.
Yeah. I think it was more of a problem in the sense of, like we spoke earlier, good coaches are getting harder to find at that level of what you want in an academy. So it's like, it's not just a B license minimum criteria. It's a B license, but it's not a B license piece of paper. We want a B license piece of paper with a coach that can actually coach at B license level. And then within that, personality, do they fit the current team of coaches we've got around the club, etc.? And I think at that club, we had them people. We had some really good people. There was, I think, one of the things I taught, and you know me well enough, Yaz, I think one of the things that I'd like to think I taught people was it's okay to debate. It's okay to not agree.
Mm.
You almost get better answers and outcomes if you don't agree. I think some of them at first may have thought I was argumentative. When they realised now, and when I see them now, and we've got a couple of them at the club here now, they actually have spoke to me and said the power of that, we didn't get at first, now we get it. Did it affect how I work with them? No. I think I said at the start, yes, genuinely, hand on my heart, I'm all about the people. So whether it's our club or your club or another club or another local club, if that's where you deserve to be and that's where you want to go, go. If I've helped shape that along the way, fantastic. And I think that comes from, I've had some really good people around me, Dave Stevens, Dennis Mortimer, Ian Cooper. Now at this club with Mikael Saw, Rich Stevens, Miguel Lira. I've had some people that have taught me good things, things to do, things not to do. I think it's really important we identify as people what I need to take from my toolbox. So as an example, Yaz, knowing you, what can I take from Yaz that it's not currently in my toolbox? What bit do I like? And what bit do I like from Rich? What bit do I like from Mick? What do I like from Kyle, from Dan? You know, looking at our PDP and being around the coaches, some very experienced people, what bits do I want to take? I don't want to be them. I want to be me and authentic, but I appreciate, I sort of have this, if I'm 50% of what I keep, what I keep, and take bits from everyone else,
yeah,
like, that's them are the bits. And I think the key to that then, Yaz, is identifying when do I need to get that piece of equipment out of the toolbox to use, and what does that picture look like?
Yeah, and I think there's something really important there as well, though, that you said there that, but what do I like about this person? What do I like about that person? But sometimes it could be that you don't like the how of what of that person, but the what of that person.
Yes.
So you might like the what, and you might realize, actually, do you know what? Doing it their way might not be authentic to me.
Yeah.
But I recognize that their way is getting them results, right? And, you know, I mentioned that to say that, you know, I think there's a lot of coaches out there who probably be in that position where they like the what you're getting out of it, but they don't like the how you go about doing it. And my only challenge to coaches, my, you know, I encourage coaches as well, until you find your own how, go with this, because it's, because you can see it's getting results, right? Yeah. And then use that as almost like a bit of a motivation to say, what, well, I'm going to figure out my own how to that what. But until I get my own how, I'm going to use that. Because the thing, you might actually understand, you know, you might, I think the best part about it gives you that understanding of, well, actually, no, there's going to be different house for different environments.
Yeah.
And a different house for different players. And I think that bit's just as key, right? Because I think coming back to the piece about being authentic, and you're only going to be able to implement anything you're authentic with. Otherwise, people are going to see through it, and especially top players.
Yeah.
They'll recognize when you're not being yourself, and if you're not backing what you're really saying.
Yeah, and it's a great point, Yaz. And I'm very much, I've been called it a few times. I know myself very, very well. I'm quite a strong character in the sense of, you know, if I believe in this, then I believe in it, and I hold it true to my values.
Mm.
My integrity doesn't change. My beliefs don't change. If I see somebody do something and I think I like the outcome, but I don't like how they're doing it, and I haven't got a way, I agree, absolutely agree with you. Maybe I need to use their way as a bit of a framework for now, and then look at what can I hang off that framework that makes it mine. But I genuinely, what you've just said is really important, mate, is you're better off taking theirs until you know what yours is, because sometimes things grow on us.
Yeah.
Sometimes we realise, and I'll go back to my first opening talk with Tony. I was 11 years old when I met Tony. That was 40 years ago. And his name stuck in my mind because there was lots of things that I look at and I think, I don't know how he got us to be. We was quite a successful team, but it was never through coaching. Like I said, it was always about his soft skills.
Mm.
From that, I've probably took him and then hung off my bits about me, because I think my biggest strength is, I like to ask the players questions. I genuinely believe in player ownership, mate. I believe that we talk a lot about producing problem solvers, but yet some coaching sessions are designed to look pretty and nice, probably for the people standing around the outside of the cage or whatever. So they go, oh, he's a good coach. Look, the kids are loving it. But actually, there's no chaos. So yeah. I believe we have to throw chaos in. Sometimes just throwing that grenade in and just seeing what the kids deal with.
How they respond, yeah.
But they respond to it, and you start to recognise leadership in players, the players that are happy to talk up and take accountability, responsibility, lead. Even at the young ages, you see them. You've just got to know what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you're talking about it from a perspective of it being a deliberate and intentional tool that's used for coaching, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think that's always the case, though, is it? So you're talking about the soft skills of Tony, and Tony was probably just trying to get you guys to just play and have fun. But he was doing all those bits that were helping in the process, maybe not being conscious about it, right? And it's quite interesting because I was recently having a conversation with a couple of players, and they're at that kind of under 15, under 16 kind of age group, and they're trying to, you know, maybe trying to break into that kind of elite pathway, but maybe not quite able to get into it yet. So it's just maybe contingency planning, like what how do we approach it, where do we go with it? And they're saying, oh yeah, we've got this lineup, and all right, brilliant, places that you've got lined up are all coaches that you know, which is great, which is fine, but I guess similar to yourself, you know, I like to throw a grenade in here or there. Right? The question I asked him is, well, have you ever actually learned anything from that coach? Have you ever actually thought about that? And not to say the coaching isn't good, but don't just go there because there's a relationship. Because you probably loved playing for Tony, but how much did Tony really teach you?
Yeah, does
that make sense? Like, consciously. And I think it's such an important thing for players at that stage of their journey, in any stage really, to consider, am I going just because I've got a good relationship? Yeah, you might have had a good relationship, but how far is that coach able to now take you? If they haven't really taught you anything up until now, what makes you think they're going to teach you anything now? Because, the one thing that's, in my opinion, just a fact, we don't need to exist in this game because the players will play without us.
Absolutely.
And the cream will always rise to the top. So there's always going to be players that are going to be the top players. There's always going to be players that are going to be there or thereabouts. But when the coaches come in, can the coaches make those players there or thereabouts become top players and vice versa? And that's only going to happen through good coaching. Yes, there's an element and there's an argument for the environment that you set. And of course, all that stuff is important. But you can have the best environment in the world, but if there's no coaching taking place, you're only going to go so far with it. Whereas I do feel like on the flip end, you could have you could have more success in some situations where there's maybe a little bit more of a toxic environment, but good coaching taking place, because then it becomes individualized, right? So, you know, just talk to that a little bit in terms of how important you think that is for coaches to actually think, well, I've got a great relationship with this player, but I'm actually helping them. Or on the flip side, for a player, maybe that might be listening to, or a parent that might be listening to this for their players, and actually, has that coach ever actually coached our player? Because, you know, we're talking about perceptions here, right? You're talking about that pretty looking practice that looks like good coaching because that's what the perception is. But really, is there any coaching taking place at all?
Yeah. So I think it's something I'm quite passionate about, Yaz, in the sense of I still have two young sons. One of them plays grassroots football, so I'm still in and around it and watching it. And sometimes I hear conversations, if I overhear someone say, oh, there's a scout here from this place or that place. And then I hear people say, oh, well, I don't want none of our players to go there. I don't want them to leave us because, you know, we're doing well and we're going to win the league this year, but we need these players. And I almost think, selfishly, I have a grudge about that because I just think, you know, we should want those players to move on.
Yeah.
I've heard, when I was an educator, I heard conversations around people saying, well, these clubs come in and take our players and then 6 weeks later they tell them they're not good enough and that player then thinks they can come back to my club and I tell them, well, no, your space has gone. And I'm like, wow, really? So you're almost holding it against them because they're trying to be better. Like, you don't see it as pat yourself on the back. You're helping these young kids maybe part achieve a dream. You know, the fact that they've got there is testament to maybe your coaching.
And it's kind of like you and your head of coaching role, right?
Yeah, you should be proud of that, but the amount that aren't. But then at the same time, you've got the coach to say, oh, no, look, success to me is, you know, listen, if we get relegated, but two of our players have gone to two academies and been signed, you know, that's the best season we can have. And I'm like, wow, you know, thank you. We've still got good people in that part of it. And I think that's where education needs to go now. And I think, I guess, like you said, Yaz, success is different for everybody. What does it look like? That perfect practice, is there actual coaching taking place? Is it just facilitated? I think if it's facilitated where it's a lovely session, it's all working well, there's no real decisions to be made, it's all hunky-dory, the kids are doing this, that and the other really good, I almost look and think, that's coach-centred, not player-centred, because the coach is thinking about what he looks like from the outside looking in. And I just rather, I'd love a parent to say to me after, mate, I've just watched your session, the kids were all over the place. For the first 10 minutes, they didn't have a clue what they were doing. Not sure your coaching's brilliant. I'd say, okay, brilliant, great observation. What did it look like towards the end of the session? Yeah, it got better. Okay, thank you very much. There's the compliment. It got better. Did I make it better? No, the kids struggled and worked out for themselves. Thank you. There's my compliment, mate. Because if we don't allow that to happen, we won't produce good decision makers. We won't produce problem solvers.
Yeah.
And it's almost like embrace that fear of, as a coach, just embrace that fear of, doesn't have to look brilliant. What has to happen is the kids come away and go, nee, that was really challenging tonight. I struggled with that a little bit. At the end, I realised, you know, I needed to do this better, that better. Okay, fantastic. Do you think it will make you better? Yeah, because on Sunday when we're playing Tottenham, they won't allow me to just turn. They'll be there pulling my shirt, being strong, physical. So I probably need to practice like that. Fantastic. Because like you said earlier, I think you used a good term. I can't quite remember what term was, but it was about making it as relevant and real to the game. It doesn't always have to look like a game. Yeah,
representative design.
Yeah, so just making sure, like, you know, in the game, people will get their hand in your back. They will hold your shirt. If we don't practice that sometimes, how do I deal with it in a game?
Do you know what's really important there, I think, Neil, just to highlight? I think we actually need to coach those bits as well. Yeah, yeah. Push them. Pull their shirt, do that stuff, because that's what's going to happen in a game. And it's not, we're not, and I think I was delivering a course on just before the weekend. And I think sometimes, even in a coach development capacity, you've got to get people to understand just how the, I talk about this all the time, but the game is just a bunch of patterns, right? There are some things that just happen and they happen again and again and again. Obviously, there's going to be subtle differences, but the concept of what is happening in front of you is going to happen again and it's going to happen again. It's how often can you notice what is leading towards that becoming a thing and what happens off the back end of that becoming a thing or being a thing, if that makes sense. Yeah. And it's... One, we talk about coach education, and go back a few years ago when I did my UEFA B, and I think I just remember one phrase the coach educator saying at the time, and it's always stuck with me, and I've always used it ever since, right? And I can't remember what it was that happened specifically, but it's almost, he was speaking about a certain situation, it then happened, and he goes, look, I didn't make that up, it just happened, I didn't tell him to do that, that's what happened, it was, because there's a pattern, right? And it's always stuck with me ever since then. And I've always used it with my players. It's like, so that they understand. It's like, well, look, I'm not just telling you this because it's what I think. That has happened. Or this is a little subtle thing that, like you said, you talk about stop, stand still, you know, doing that intervention. Right, Neil, come and stand over here for a second. I just want you to move over to a yard or two. What you often see, sometimes you see, well, because I've moved Neil, John over there is going to take a step to the right. Or, you know, Tyrone over there is going to take a step to the left and tuck in a little bit more. It's like, whoa, hold on a second. Did anyone see what John and Tyrone just did there? Well, they just moved in, didn't they? Well, why did they do that? Because they recognise that there's a pattern about to occur.
Yeah.
And they're picking up on it. And it's just like getting the players and even the coaches to understand that these things just keep happening. You just have to keep noticing them. So I guess, you know, coming back to your journey then, and, you know, even when you're on coaching, how do you get the players to... And even the coaches that you're talking about working in your grassroots environment with your son and maybe not coaching a team, but maybe supporting the coach. Well, how do we, what are your thoughts on how we get coaches to start to recognize these patterns?
I think I hate saying this. And when I say I hate saying it, because people take it literally, the game will teach.
Simple, right?
The patterns. as if you go back to our A license, we was the guinea pig group, wasn't we, of where that transition was between the old and the new. And I think Bish turned round on the first day and said, look, one thing you'll learn is we can't tell you what will or won't happen in the game or in your session, because players will be players, people are people, they'll do what they want to do. And I think that was a really important message, because there was a situation where I said something and somebody said, no, that won't happen. It was like, well, we were just told it, you can't say that. So I took that then to heart, in the sense of, I now let my players know, look, everything we show you is just a picture. And it's just a picture that may or may not happen. But at some stage during your career, whether that's grassroots, professional, semi-professional, you'll have a moment where you'll go, ah, I remember Neil teaching us this, or Neil showing us this. And it's like, I haven't showed you. The game's showing you all the time.
Yeah.
If it doesn't come
there out in front of you.
Absolutely. and it's almost like, and this is why I have these conversations now, Yaz, with people who are valued friends, coaches, and I talk about, surely if we're going to produce players, we really need to produce players that can play in them now.
Yes.
Like, here's the pattern. Great. Oh, Yaz has just stopped us playing that. Oh, I'm going to fall apart because I don't know what. No, no. This is the now then. So what else can I? Oh, I might have to go on then.
But this comes back to what you said earlier, and I think we kind of glossed over it a little bit, but that bit about your level two, stop, stand still, right, I want to do it, I want you to do it like this. And because they were cheating, because they knew what was coming next, you're coaching them a bit, well, okay, well, but you're even making them aware of that. Now, if that, no, what was the situation?
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Right, what are we trying to achieve? Okay, brilliant. What would stop us from achieving it? Right, brilliant. If they did that, now what do we do? So they can, like you said, work in the now and play in the now, because it's, and it, again, it's a phrase that's always kind of stuck with me. And I'm sure you had this in your journey as well, where we've got to be able to coach the what and then the what if.
Yeah, absolutely. Right,
because that bit I think is so important, because it's almost like if you want to get back to that piece around the pretty practice, well, actually, the pretty practice is only working because you're telling people only what they can do and not what if.
Yes.
I.e., Neil, you can only play the ball there. And yes, you can only block that pass. You can't do anything else. Therefore, it becomes less representative, because that's not what the game tells us.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow me to respond to you. And it's a phrase that I came across recently, and I believe it was Bruce Lee that said this, that my technique is in response to your technique. Because he said, Bruce, how, you know, I think the question was asked to him essentially was, how did you get so good at this? Because I didn't. I just got. It's not me getting good at it. It's me responding, and I'm responding to what you're doing. And Fundamentally, that's what the game is, right? And he's picking up on in his context maybe certain cues and triggers about how people are approaching him. Whether it's, oh, they're raising their hand in this way, so now I've got to raise, and whatever that looks like. The same thing exists in football and in every other course of life. We talk about anticipation being one of the most highly sought after skills in expert kind of areas within the game, right, for an individual. It's like, well, anticipation is based on one thing: you're reading the patterns.
Yeah.
But you're reading it quicker than the opposition are reading it, and even if they're not conscious about what they're doing, you're still utilizing that pattern to identify what is a probable outcome.
Yeah,
you know, we talk about the little details, like, for instance, if I'm now opening my hips, well, actually opening my hips means I'm probably going to open up and try and play that direction or whatever that looks like. And it's actually, well, that's a pattern in itself.
Yeah.
And I think that bit for me gets overlooked far too often today, if at all covered at all.
Yeah, that word anticipation, like if we could bottle it, we'd be billionaires because it's worth a fortune. Can I coach it? I can guide you towards, like you say. So for me, a trigger might be to my player, stay inside the pitch. As the centre back opens his hips up to play to a full back, I might start stealing a yard or two. As his foot goes back, there's another trigger. It looks like he's going to pass. Now I'm going to get there as quick as I can as the ball travels.
Yeah.
But telling them that and repeating that, and lots of repetition's great. But in the game, in the moment, with everything else that's going on, the voices, the coaches, the teammates, the opposition, I've got to be able to do that autonomously.
And, yeah, 100%.
And that's where these reading these triggers. So we talk about anticipation, but actually, if you're a really good reader of the game, if you study the game, we talk about as coaches, you know, be a student of the game. Players need to be a student of the game. They need to want to. And I think we've had these conversations around our club a few times with people. How many of these academy kids go home and watch football like we would have? I don't think they do. I don't think they do. So I'll go back to ours. We weren't really coached, but my dad took me to football to the Villa every weekend. I went there if it was a home game from the age of 6, 7, all the way through. And now I still watch football. And I look at that and think that's probably what taught me how to read a game more than any coaches ever. Because the coach, well, I can only read what he's doing at that given time. Watching the game, my eldest son used to play centre mid, and at the time, Yaya Touré was the one to watch. And I used to say to him, Villa are playing Man City, don't watch Villa, watch Yaya Touré. What does he do and when does he do it? What makes him do that? And he was 11 at the time, mate. And now when I look back, or if I question my night, I'd say, Dad, that was the best learning I ever had. Because I was just, he was teaching me how to watch situations build so that I can recognise those situations. And I'm just not sure young kids watch that much football. They get home after training and it's straight to an Xbox or a PlayStation.
Yeah. I think you're spot on. And I think one of the key things, sorry, just to cut you there, is that even with coaches, I don't think it's so much that they don't watch the game, but they watch the ball. They're not observing the game, right? And the little things, because the bottom line is, you know, and I've always said this, is that, look, Neil's on the ball. I can't help him. Neil's in the world of his own problems, right? There's nothing I'm going to say right now that's going to help him. It's probably going to hinder him. And not categorically 100%, but I do believe that fundamentally, if you're on the ball, there's only so much I can do for you. So if I'm observing the game and I can see what's happening away from it and around it, those are the people that can really help.
Yeah.
Because they're less involved in it. There's probably an element of slightly a different element of pressure. Maybe I wouldn't say less pressure, but different pressures they're dealing with. But the pressures they're dealing with don't come with maybe the same anxieties and the same kind of consequences that there might be for the person on the ball, if you like. So I think it's just about helping people, like you said, become students of the game in a way where they're observing it. They're actually watching. They're looking out for the... I remember I was helping coaching a training session a couple of days ago, and every time the ball would go up, the centre-backs would just stand there watching the game. It's like, hold on, the game's going on.
Yeah.
Move with it.
Yeah.
Move with the game. Like, literally, get like, don't switch off. Like, you can't switch off because there's never a dead moment in the game.
Yeah.
Like, even if it is as little as you might stand still, but you can't be doing nothing. You can't be inactive. You can't be ball watching. Watch where everyone else is, because that split second where someone else is watching the game when you're not, that's when they're going to catch you out. Because they're looking at you. They're seeing that you're not actually paying attention to them and you're paying attention to the ball. All of a sudden, they've now seen the pattern. Well, my player's about to nick it. I'm on a run.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just, again, it's helping players to understand that piece. But I think it's, again, we spoke off air about, you know, the coach development piece in terms of where that's gone and where that's come from. What are your thoughts on that? You know, what do you see as some of the key benefits in terms of where it's gone? And you mentioned that obviously we were the, you know, if you like, the guinea pig group for the transition of the A license. What would you say some of the positives were from that experience?
Yeah, so I'm just going to answer a question that you just spoke about first, mate. Sorry, a question. I just want to jump in where you spoke about the looking, getting people to look away from the ball. And it's key, really. 2009, I went and done my A-licence prep course, and I'd done it at the David Beckham Centre in London, in Greenwich. And Ted Dale, Steve Rutter, Jeff Pike were delivering the course, a really good company, you know, fantastic educators, very high profile people. And the reason I then went to do my A license in, I think we do it in 2016, was it, yes, I think, early 2016, February.
Yeah, sounds about right, yeah, February 2016, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the reason I didn't do it in 2009 was I'm very, very conscious of I live what I say. You can get qualified quick, you don't get good quick. 7 years later, I completed my A license because in 2009, what I realised was Jeff Pike was coaching at the time. There was 30 of us mic'd up on the side of the pitch. And the fullback had the ball, played into a centre mid. And then they stopped it and they said, right, stop. What have you saw? So it was about being brave then. But as the fullback got the ball, as he opened up, centre mid dropped in, got himself on the ball. Brilliant. Okay, good. That's what happened. On the centre mid's touch, what else happened? He faced forward. He didn't. Okay. Anything else? No. Anything from anyone else? Everyone was like either not brave enough to answer or didn't see, like I didn't see. He said, right, number nine, on the centre mid's touch, what did you look to do? Show us. And he arced his run and pulled off to make a forward run. And he said, how many of you saw that? Not one hand went up. That's what made me realise I'm not ready for this. I'm still looking at the ball in the first phase. Yeah. I haven't, as that ball's traveling to the centre mid, I'm not even looking what the 9, the 11, the 7's doing. I'm still following the ball. And
I think there's something really subtle in what you said there, just to pause you for a second, is that it's not that you're not looking for it. You're not even considering it to be
absolutely
a thing.
Absolutely. And I had to then, because of me being me and genuinely, I live. If you're not ready, it's okay. It's not a race. Be good at what you are. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to stay as a B license coach, but I'm going to be an even better bit. I'm going to concentrate now on, can I put on any B license session, phase of play, topic, call it what you like. Can I do it and can I do it the best? And that's what I focused on, being the best B license coach could be. I don't need to be an A license. I'm not there yet. And I think that's really, I just wanted to jump back on that because I thought it was really important. And I guess that would be my message to anyone now, young, coming through. It's not a race. Your B license will get you into our club because on a CV because we'll interview you. But then you've got to go and deliver it. And that's where you'll fall apart. You can't hide. Like we say to players, there's nowhere to hide on a pitch. Coaching's the same. You can have the piece of paper, but when we say, brilliant, lovely, yep, we've got him in. He's got everything we need. Brilliant, just want him to run a session. That's what you're going to be judged on. So make sure you take your time. Be where you are. Know yourself. I guess it's about knowing yourself. I was very conscious of me. I knew me. And yeah. I was happy to say, I'm not ready yet.
I think there's... I'm going to question that. I'm going to challenge that. Is it that you knew you or you accepted that that's where you were? Because I think there's a fundamental difference, right? Because there's a lot of coaches, I think they probably know where they're at.
Yeah.
And they don't want to face that.
Do you know what? I've learned something. Yes, you're right. I think I just accepted this is where I'm at, you know? So, yeah, I just accepted it. I just thought, you know, I'm not ready.
Yeah, because I think one of the things I've observed in my experience, especially in the last couple of years doing a lot more of the coach mentoring and the coach education stuff specifically, is that there's a lot of coaches who are maybe not even aware of these things, because often they're in environments where they're seen as the senior coach or they're seen as the one that's with the most knowledgeable. So even the people around them aren't really challenging them.
Yeah.
Because they're assuming that this person knows what they're talking about, which is fine. I get it. But then the question I always say to the challenge I always have to coaches, rather, is get yourself around people that you think are better than and those that you're not better than.
Yeah.
Because they're going to both teach you different things. right? And you and especially if you're working alongside coaches who you think you're better than, when you're supporting them in their development, if that's something you're actively trying to do, you're going to want to be 100% sure that you're giving them the right information. So that in itself should challenge you to do what you need to do. But then, you know, just talk about that a little bit briefly, because, you know, you talked about the B license and you recognizing that at that point you wanted to just go away and just really consolidate becoming a solid B license coach. Yeah. What does that look like for you? Because obviously that even that in its perceptions has changed massively over the years as well.
Yeah. So B license was amazing. I'd done it at Lillishaw, so before St George's Park was even thought of. Again, educators, Ted Dale, Derek Egan, Mike Pedgick was a course director. It was the biggest one they ever held. It was 60 candidates on there, and they had three groups of 20 all running at the same time. I believe when I spoke to Ted last, he said they'd never ever done it again, because it was a big job. Really great experience, come away from there. Lots and lots of new ideas. Brain was buzzing. It was really intense. It was 7 days, I think it was 7 days at Lillishaw, up at 7, canteen for 8, out on the pitches at 9, back in the lecture theatre at 7:30, back in your rooms about 9, 8:30. So there was no time to digest anything, because you was knackered, you went to sleep, you woke up, breakfast, back on the pitch. And we spoke about how coach education's changed. And I think for me, I kind of love that pressure, but at the same time, I did fear it. But I still think that's the best way. So the new way now of it, it's about Neil's journey, and Neil can take it when he wants. And I think it's lovely. It's great. But I think we lose a little bit of people almost have this. And even if they think they don't, I think subconsciously they're still thinking, well, it doesn't matter because I'm on a journey, which means at some point that journey ends and I get my qualification. And I think I understand football saying that's the best way. It's the way people like to learn today. I doubt whether we'd learn to drive that way. Oh, you're just going to drive for so many months and then you'll get your driving license anyway, you know, because we think that's the best way you'd like to learn. Pass and fail is like it's too scary.
You'll be surprised, you know, you'll be surprised.
Yeah. Well, again, it was a long time ago as well, I passed my test, but yeah, I just think it, again, education, you know, you don't get a degree by just being there. You've still got to produce some work that says this is good enough. And I think every person in uni would be thinking, I want to get a first, but if I got a 2-1 or a 2, I'll get something rather than a fail. I think having that element.
I think just on that, you know, just you're talking about the degree there, sorry to cut you, I think it's really important to highlight this. There's a lot of people that are going down the route of taking coaching degrees now. And some are even, I guess, in some ways trying to challenge the system that exists in that they're saying, well, no, I've got a coaching degree, but. So that means I should be should be good enough to be a UEFA C or a UEFA B coach.
Yeah. I think what would be really good is these. I have heard that it branded around a bit. I'm hoping that it exists, almost like an apprenticeship degree. So I'm actually doing a degree level 7 qual, but with the practical element in a professional environment. I think that then might means I come out with the degree, which is great, but I also come out with the practical
experience.
I can actually put it into practice. I think that would be fantastic. And again, my son's doing his coaching degree, but he also comes into the club and works in the pre-academy. So he's actually living it and doing the theory and practical side of it. I hope that answers your question. There was a second part to your question.
Just the transition of the, you know, coach education in terms of how it's gone in that. Obviously, we were part of that A license cohort. Yeah. And then, you know, what were some of the key, you know, what do you think were some of the real key benefits of going through that pathway for you?
I think selfishly for me, seeing what it was going to look like and how somebody shaped something at that level. I always think the best part of any course, Yaz, is off the grass, the social side, in the bar, in the restaurant, over dinner, breakfast, chatting with people, meeting yourself, then relationships then that stay as lifelong friends. I always think they're the real valuable things. The course in itself was very different to what I expected. One of the things I wish we had, because I'd like to think the idea behind our course and the next course and the next course was the evaluation side, the plan, do, review. Okay, we've just run this first one. What's the feedback? Right, okay, they wanted a bit more of that, not enough of that. Right, let's put that in. Right, what's the feedback? I didn't. And by three or four courses down the road, you go, right, brilliant.
Got it.
The feedback is everyone's loving it. It's the right mix of everything.
Yeah.
And if I'm wrong, mate, please let me know. But I don't remember being asked to review that course or do an evaluation on that course on what we felt was good, what we would have liked more of or less of. So I think they missed the trick, really. But I might be wrong.
No, I think you're spot on. But I think I'm now thinking back to it, because actually when we initially applied, you can correct me if I'm wrong, we did still apply under it being a part one.
Yes.
And it actually obviously didn't transpire in that way.
No.
But we weren't aware of that until we actually got on the course, which is fine. Yeah. But I think the way that we came on thinking it was going to be a part one leading into a part two. Obviously, that never happened. So I think they probably miss the trip. But I think it was, you know, I say that to say, I think they were still going through the process of identifying, right, what is this actually going to look like? And I think you're spot on. I think had they had those touch points of feedback in between or even whilst the block was going on, it probably would allow them to plan for the next block a little bit better and then potentially for the next cohort and so on and so forth. So I think I don't think I ever remember getting formally asked for any feedback and reviews. But then I think the other side of it, you're never going to please everyone, are you?
No. And I think if you set out to try and please everybody, you probably failed already.
Yeah.
Going back to that now, and I'm smiling because I remember we signed up for a part one, we paid X amount of money, and I actually paid for it out of my own business money, out of my own pocket.
Yeah.
Place where I was working said they'd pay. But obviously that comes with, but if you leave, you pay this much back, that man. I just thought, you know what? So two reasons, yes. It was my own motivation then to say.
Yeah. An investment in yourself.
Yeah, I've got to come away with something. I can't spend, I'm not going to go into Harvey Nichols and put that much money on the desk and walk out without an item of clothing. So I've got to come away with this, so it made me better and focus more. But the best part about that, and I actually remember it now, we were all sitting down and they actually said, you've paid for your part one. The good news is you won't pay any more.
Yeah.
It's going to be rolled up. It was almost like, I thought, brilliant. So I think that was the first time I enabled myself to smile on that course, because you get a bit of imposter syndrome, don't you? Am I ready for it? Have I invested wisely? I had a young family at the time. Was it the right thing to do? My partner, she works in swimming, she's been amazing, mate, because she might have wanted to progress her pathway. She allowed me to progress mine. So I can't thank them enough. The times of yourself, I remember meeting you, Yaz, and I think you just had your first daughter, wasn't very old.
That's right, yeah.
So again, sacrifices our family takes, so we can selfishly go on this pathway and journey. And at the end of it, it's got to provide, because the sacrifices from them, the time away, the
100%.
So I think, that was probably the first time I smiled on that course, was like, I haven't got to spend any more. Fantastic. Thank you. But it was a great course. Again, Wayne Burnett was my in-house tutor, and Craig Hinton signed me off at the end of it. Two great people, two people that were going through their own process of just jumping on as tutors. And
That's right.
Seeing them grow, and every now and again, I will email Wayne just to say, hope you remember, mate. Thank you, learnt a lot. Hope you're good. Well, wow. And he always responds. So I think them relationships, mine and yours, Rob, I think they're massive on them courses. I think that's the bit people need to really focus on, the networking opportunities.
100%. I think you hit it on the nail earlier on as well, in that those conversation. I think people always talk about it, you know, those informal conversations that you have away from the actual content itself, or even if it's just outside of the formal class setting, right, where you're just conversing over whatever was discussed, you know, what was the key takeaways for you, and having those debates. And I think having those healthy debates was like, well, actually, no, I think I'd probably do it this way. And I think that's the beauty of it, right? But I think the key thing is that by that stage of your journey, anyone who's there is probably there with a deliberate and intentional outcome.
Yeah.
Yes, I do want to get the qualification, but I also really want to get better.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the harder bit to try and get across in the earlier pathway,
yeah.
Right? Where it's at, maybe at level one, or even at UEFA C, and even to some extent UEFA B, because, you know, you gave a perfect example of yourself, you know, having done the prep course in 2009. It's interesting because I think I was on the last ever prep course they did.
Right.
Just before we did that A license. I think it was about 6-7 months before that. And I don't think they ever ran one after that. But just to really understand, I remember this again. I remember like it was yesterday. I think it was Guy Whittingham. Guy Whittingham, Ted Dell, somewhere up in West London, and went on the course. And then they were just talking about the situation about, right, well, UEFA A license. What is this? What does it mean to be UEFA A license coach? And I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty sure it's close to this. It was something along the lines of, it's international break. You've got two players that have been kept behind because their country's not playing. You've got 10 footballs because the caretaker's lost the keys. There's a bag of footballs. You've got a set of cones, and you've got a couple white lines. You've got 60 minutes with these two players, and you've got to keep them engaged for a whole hour. Thinking, all right. Because in the two players, they're Portuguese and they're Pepe and Ronaldo. I thought, blimey, all right. So that experience that you described about being on the A, you know, going on the A license prep, and you thinking, I'm not ready for this.
Yeah.
For me, it was slightly different. I thought I'm not ready for this, but yeah, I'm ready to take the challenge on, right? So I think it was perfect for me, and it was just really kind of put it into perspective at that time what it actually meant, in my opinion. And you know, different people are going to see it differently, but what it actually meant to be able to become a UEFA A license coach.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that real prestige, that real, like, right, yeah, you've done well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? You've done well. And that was the feeling I got. I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. I think maybe people have that perception of prestige, but they don't really appreciate it until they see what an A license coach should look like or could look like. And it's interesting because I remember about a year ago, I started mentoring a coach. And there was another coach who introduced me to this coach who I'd been mentoring for a couple of years. And I don't say this to in any particular way, but he's like, the guy that I was mentoring introduced me to this other guy, and he was telling this other guy about me as an example, and goes, yeah, you need to meet this guy. You know, he's an A license coach. He goes, oh yeah, I've seen A license coach. I know B license coaches. You know, I work with him. And it's like, no, you don't understand. This guy's an A license coach, like an actual A license coach.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, as you well know, there's going to be people that have got qualifications, who don't have qualifications, but it doesn't necessarily represent who they are and what they can produce, right? And then. A year later, he's like, okay, and I get what he meant now. I get what he meant about you actually being an A license coach.
Yeah, yeah.
And I say, it's got nothing to do with the qualification, but it's just, I think the appreciation I have for those finer things within it, the nuances that exist within it. And I'm not saying I'm great at all. I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or form, but it's the considerations. The fact that I'm even considering these things allows me to have the potential to be these things.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I think at the time, Yaz, and don't quote me on the numbers, but I think when we went through, there was probably only about, I don't know, 3,000 A license coaches in the whole country. And now I don't know what the number is, but that's because there was a, you know, you had to be good, you had to deserve it, you had to show that I deserve this award, you know. The prestige of it. I mean, I think my mates were more proud of me than I was myself, really, mate, because they used to go, no, So you're an A license. So that would enable you to do this, this, and this. And I was like, I believe so. And they were like, wow, that's mad. Dude, for all them years ago when you said you were going back to college that you'd actually achieve this. And I was like, do you know what? You're right. I never did. I never thought. I didn't even think of an A license. I was just, in fact, after my level two, I was just like, oh, this is amazing. And, you know, I think, yeah, it's one of the things that I talk about is, and I keep going on about this, don't worry about getting qualified quick, get good quick. It takes a while to get good. From my level one to level two, I think it was 12 months.
Yeah.
Like that. But from level two to UEFA B was 6 years. From UEFA B then to my A license actually starting was 9 years or 10 years. So I genuinely felt I wanted to be a good level two coach, a good UEFA B coach. Now, can I be a good A license coach? The only thing I look at the A licenses is, and I guess I'm going to ask you the question, I'm going to reverse roles a little bit here. How many A license sessions have you run in the last 7 years since being an A license coach? So you consider what the A license, what we thought it was at the time. So it's 11 v 11. Yeah. It's this.
Do you know what? Just to give context, so I've done a lot more coach development in the recent years than I have coaching.
Yeah.
But following the A license itself, I'd probably say about 2 years worth, because I was actively coaching at that point, like full on. And so I was doing, and I had the space available to do it.
Yeah.
So I was doing a lot of kind of, you know, phase of play work, you know, that 11v11 work. So, you know, but I also appreciate and understand that that's not a common thing for a lot of coaches to be able to do. Not because they're not trying to do it, not because they're not wanting to do it.
Yeah.
But just they don't have the facilities or the space available to do that.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things, the biggest things I took away from my A license experience in particular, and I don't know whether it was the course itself which gave me this, but I think it was during the time where I was consolidating this for myself, was the need and the importance for every practice to link back into the game. And then I guess me being me, and I think we've all got our own kind of things that we kind of really nail down and have a real passion for, to get into the nitty-gritty of. For me, that was the technical detail, that was that the finer detail, and the, you know, the little, those little nuances that you talk about, you know, about opening the body, all of that, all of those little finer things is something that I think I've really attached myself to as a coach. So when I'm observing the game, these are the things I'm looking at. So I'm not looking at it as a whole picture, and I'm breaking it down to the finer detail, right? So I think for me, it became easier for me to maybe, again, I don't know whether it's, I think the A license definitely emphasized some of that. Yeah. I don't know if, but it helped me, like I said, I was going through a consolidation period at a time where what I took away was, right, can I give A license detail without having it to be an 11v11? And that's just how I viewed my takeaway from it.
Yeah. So, and mate, you've just, that was my whole point, and you've just answered it for how I did. Somebody asked me that question. That's why I said it's a great question, because what is an A license session? Does it have to be 11v11 on a full size pitch? You know, and for me, what I said to him was, it doesn't have to be like that anymore. It's not always 11v11 on a full size pitch. The detail you put within the session is the A license bit. I think.
Well, what I would say just on that, though, I think really importantly, I think part of becoming the A license coach is the ability to be able to do it across that, which I think is getting maybe underappreciated and overlooked now, because I think that in itself is a skill. I can give you A license detail working 4v4. I can give you A license detail working 6v6. Yeah, but can you do it 11v11 when everything is happening?
Yeah, yeah. And that's where, so I've watched, I still have this, I like to watch people work. I'm not in coach education anymore. I like to watch other coaches work. I'll go and watch the PDP, because that's where I'm sort of, my day-to-day role is linked with those players. But I'm not always watching the players, I'm watching the coach, the multidisciplinaries, how they engage, how they act. One of the things I noticed when I've watched other people away from the club, or gone and watched people that say, oh, he's an A-licensed coach, I watch them doing the game, And I see the game at that level, mate. It's a game of chess, isn't it? I think you mentioned it earlier, but you didn't use chess as the thing. It's almost like I'm going to react. You use Bruce Lee as the method. What Yaz does in his team, how do I counterbalance or counteract against that? So it's that, that's where the manager earns his money. And what I found was, yeah, there are A-licensed coaches putting on A-licensed sessions, or they're now managing at a certain level of the game. But what I looked at was, they don't always see the problem in the now.
Yeah.
And I think that's the A-licensed bit for me. It's that, look at what they're doing. You see how they the tens dropping in to create the overload. And
that takes time, though.
Of course, absolutely.
That takes time. And I think one of the biggest learnings for me during that period of time was, I thought I was quite strong with that. And then I don't know if you remember one of the other guys on the course, Lev.
Yeah.
So me and Lev actually ended up working together for a year with another team off the back. And we both ended up completing our A licenses at that team. Yeah. And the one thing that really opened my eyes at the time was, I thought I was good at that. But he was better I wouldn't say that he was better at me at doing it, but he could do it quicker.
Yeah.
And it always bugged me. I was thinking, why is that? Why can he see it after maybe like one or two moments and it takes me three or four? And it was quite simple. Well, he's been doing it for 10 years longer than you, Yas. Right? And it really kind of, at the time, not to say that I was arrogant or anything, but I think it kind of humbled me to say, do you know what? Let me just stay in my lane right now. Let me know where I need to work on, what I need to fix on. And then let me just nail that, because that bit there, and that's when again, you know, start talking about these patterns, you know, we start to see it a lot quicker, and you start to anticipate, right? You sometimes you don't even need to see it anymore, because you've seen it so many times in some way, shape or form, that you already know where the problem exists and what might be occurring as a result of it. So I think that does take time, and I think that's the piece where the qualification can teach you.
Absolutely.
That's time on the grass, actual time on the grass. It's not just watching the games. It's watching it live in the moment. And, you know, if you are going to watch a game, and this is one of the biggest things, and I think it's really important to highlight this as well, is that working with, there's no right or wrong, but I think working with male players in particular, especially with boys in the academies, makes this 10 times harder. Because you work outside of that environment, everything just slows down.
Yeah.
So you see it a lot quicker. But you also see it a lot quicker because the game is moving slower.
Yeah.
So if you can start to do it in this environment, and even if your long-term ambition is to work in another one, if you can do it there, you should be able to do it anywhere, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because fundamentally, you know, you're not going to see anything different. You're going to still see the same patterns that exist. There's going to be some nuances that exist because of different reasons, but the patterns exist. And I think that's the hardest part, is actually being able to do it with the speed of the game the way it is.
Yeah. And I think that's, again, just it all goes back to reiterating one of my true values and beliefs in, got to put the hours on the grass to be a good coach. The qualification is irrelevant. There's people out there with no qualifications in football, but they've been doing it 30, 40 years. They're as good as anybody you'll see. Because the paper isn't, the paper's not what makes it, is it? The paper gets you through the door. How you deliver the grass bit is what gets you the jobs. It's a great way you've just put it, because I think you're right. What's really humbling is like you said, is, I realise I just need to stay in my lane. And again, it goes back to me on that prep licence, just knowing and know what I need. And I think that's probably the little bit we lack today. I don't know if the learners have changed. I think society, I definitely wasn't brought up by social media, didn't exist. Mobile phones didn't exist. And my son always says to me, Dad, what phone did you have when you was like 12? I'm like, one that was on a wall in your nan's house that you like this, you know, if we were lucky. The parameters have changed because we didn't have the distractions then.
Yeah.
I know, Yaz, you're a lot younger than me. But we didn't have those distractions. So I think we value things a little bit differently. And how we take on process information. We know we've got to use our eyes and store it somewhere here. Whereas today's learners, they probably don't need to know the answer to everything. They just need to know, where do I find that answer?
Yeah.
What is it that I type into Google that will give me that answer?
Yeah. No, but you say that, and I think it's such a good point, because I think as much as Google can answer, there's some things that Google can't put into context.
There you go.
You'll get an answer from Google, but you can't. But it comes back to the piece, and we go full circle. They don't get to feel it. They don't get to see it.
Of course.
It's just text until they realise what it actually means in reality.
Yeah.
And that takes it to see it. Some great insights. A good conversation, man. First of all, you know, it's been great to see you. Massively appreciate you taking the time out to obviously do this. I think we should do it more often as well.
Absolutely. Definitely. Always a pleasure to chat with you, man.
No, so I'm just going to finish on this one then. Go back to your start of your coaching journey. Yeah. Speak to yourself. What's one thing that you wish you could tell yourself back then? Knowing what you know now and all the experiences that you've had.
That's a great question. The first thing that comes to mind is just enjoy it more. Embrace not knowing the answer, because you didn't need to. Be a better learner, I guess, would be the thing that I'd really tell myself. Because I did enjoy it, but there was times when, like we said, that pass or fail, yeah, there would have been an element of fear. It would have made me have to go away and learn and practice and revise and all those things that I probably weren't very good at when I was at school.
I'll challenge that though. Was it that you weren't good at it, or you weren't passionate about what you were you've been asked to revise and learn about?
Absolutely wasn't passionate. But in football, that was the one thing that and yes, I'm gonna share this because I shared it with all my scholars. It amazes most. I left school without qualifications, really, mate, because I love school. I just hated being taught. Everything I've got now, up to level 7 qualifications that sit equivalent to, are all after education, school, and something that I'm passionate about. And I think that, like you say, once you find something you're passionate about, and I think we touched on it earlier, looking at these FA educators and going, how do I get that job? You actually get paid to do, I do it for nothing, you know, is amazing. And I think that old saying, if you find something you're passionate about and do it as a job, you'll never work a day in your life. Yeah. I haven't worked for the last 24 years, mate. I love every day, and I'm thankful and blessed that I continue to do that, and people give me the opportunity to work in their clubs.
That's amazing. And long may that continue, Neil. Neil, it's been a pleasure, man. I really appreciate your time again, and I wish you all the best, man.
And likewise, mate, and let's continue to stay in touch. Who'd have thought 7-8 years ago we'd have met and would be here today, mate?
100%.
Friendship's massive, mate, and I value yours.
No, I appreciate it. I really appreciate it, man. Neil, have a great one, man.
And you, mate. Take care.
Okay.
See you soon.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about.
As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.